welcome everyone to another episode of the Independent Mindset, the podcast for candid conversations, staying curious, and simply being better. So Jason, man, what is up with you?
I got a million things on the go right now. I'm getting ready for the new tenants. Work is work, and got a whole lot of landscaping on the go to do in the next week or so. I'm going to be digging a trench, going to be building a new fence, going to be diverting a little bit a water retention. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of grunt work, but I'm looking forward to it.
Are you doing that this weekend?
I'm doing the trench the following weekend, but this weekend here, I'm redoing my laundry room, doing jackhammering, put in drain tile, all that good sort of stuff. And yeah, it's going to kick off the summer renos real well. So I'm looking forward to it.
Right on. Our next step, if we're talking renos, is biting the bullet and ordering some hardwood for most of the second floor, mainly because the baby's coming and my wife really wants me to rip out that carpet and put in some nice wood. So I'll probably be ordering some wood this week from Home Depot or somewhere.
So you're taking a second mortgage on the house?
Yeah, exactly. Although it's hardwood floor, like indoor, what really has like skyrocketed is lumber. So I'm hoping the one I'm looking at is actually cheaper compared to a lot of other actual hardwoods. It's a much thinner hardwood. It's a 2.25 inch instead of like 3.25 and up.
Okay.
So it's a bit cheaper in that sense, but a lot more work because I have a lot more slats to put down. So
did you ever do a hardwood floor?
Nope.
Just keep the pressure on it. Make sure like the boards don't separate. Because if you don't keep a good tension on it, like you'll have grooves and then it'll get all dusty and just doesn't look as good.
Absolutely. No, for sure. I might even rent a flooring, a nail gun for the, or a flooring gun, whatever they call it. Yeah, I have a brad nailer, but if I rent something bigger, it'll do a better job. I don't have to put adhesive on the floor and all that kind of stuff. So, because this will go directly through the tongue of the board and into the floor as well.
Does your floor squeak?
Not bad actually. Like the rest of, we have hardwood in the first floor and then in our master bedroom. That's how the house came. And no, not much squeaking. Although it's not that old of a house. It's not like all the houses like in downtown Ottawa where they're 100 years old and they all squeak.
Okay. Yeah. I remember one time me and Ricky, we had to his old house there up here in Moncton. His floor was squeaking because, geez, the floor joists was like 3 feet apart. Like, it wasn't safe. You'd walk it, you'd be like riding the wave.
Yeah, a little too much flex on that floor.
So to fix it, we put down, I think it was some half-inch plywood, and we put like 500 screws per board just to like hold it to something.
Yeah, just stiffen it up. Yeah. So, before we get into our second part of our four-part series of masculine archetypes, what else is new? I'll ask you just like a rapid fire. Like, what are you watching or reading or listening to these days?
I'm doing something I haven't done in probably a year and a half, and I started a Netflix series, Schitt's Creek. It's a good old Canadian show.
Wow, you started a CBC series.
Yeah, and exactly. I feel like a traitor to the cause, but it's a good show. It's okay. A very funny show.
Okay, I'm sorry. If you watch Schitt's Creek and you're actually getting into it, there is zero excuse for you not to watch or at least try The Office.
All right, I'll make a deal with you. Next time I go visit you in Ottawa, you get the beer. And I will sit through 3 episodes of The Office. I'll let you pick which 3 episodes. It can be continuous, discontinued. Pick the best 3 to introduce someone to the series. I'll watch them. I'll sit there and drink.
That's a deal. There is no way you can objectively watch those 2 shows and tell me that The Office is not better. It doesn't mean you have to shit on Schitt's Creek, but there's no way you come out of there objectively saying Schitt's Creek is a better and funnier show than The Office.
Okay.
Plus The Office, like, all of those dry humored shows now owe their most of their ideas, or at least that style, to The Office that really popularized the mockumentary, right? The dry humor, the extremely awkward humor, and also how everything's filmed as if they are being followed and surrounded by a docu-series crew.
Okay. Yeah, but, I definitely see that influence.
Yeah, but I'm actually, although the Schitt's Creek is not docu-filmed, but the humor in it is very like character-driven, awkward, that kind of stuff.
Not that awkward though. Definitely character-driven, but I find like there's good punchlines. But I see what you're saying. I see the influence. Yeah.
I have my wife and I watched the show. She liked it a bit, quite a lot. I liked it. Like, I wouldn't say I loved the show, but it was definitely watchable. I thought, what's her name? The sister played that role to a T. Alexis.
I find the only one that overacts is the mother, but yes, that's kind of part of the character. Eugene Levy's spot on. He's legit.
He's a really good actor. Eugene Levy, you know.
His son is really quite good as well. And the supporting characters, like, you either love them or hate them, but it's because they're portrayed so well.
Yeah. Yeah, Moira. Yeah, I agree. Moira can get on your nerves after a while, but yes, that is the whole point. She's also the mom in Home Alone. Do you remember?
Yeah, that's what I was being told there. Can't really play. I don't see the resemblance, but I'll take it.
I mean, it's been like a good 20 years, 30 years
or 30, something.
Yeah, almost 30 years. And then Eugene Levy's always solid. His son writes most of the show or created most of it. And then I just think Alexis, and she's from Ottawa, actually. She's spot on to play that kind of like super poupée, like, you know.
She's like the classic rich millennial girl.
Yeah. Pretty spot on.
Yeah. She's like all the thotty rich tropes. It's her. Yeah. Put it to one.
Yeah. One thing I've been watching. So, you know how big in my family with my sister and I and my wife.
Survivor.
Yeah, Survivor. My sister actually and her boyfriend just finished rewatching all of Survivor. So they watched 40 seasons. They are officially done.
A very dedicated pair of humans.
And the finale, they saved it for a night where they cooked coconut rice and some other shit. So that basically they were eating Survivor food.
Well done.
And they actually, I think they posted it on Reddit, and they got a reply from one of the old survivors named Eric. So he actually commented on their Survivor finale supper.
Okay. So like kind they just like took a photo of whatever they're making, like.
Yeah. And put it on
the marathon sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, finishing their 40 season watch through. It's nuts.
How many hours is that?
Yeah, a lot. But anyway, so we had introduced Survivor to my wife. She had never really watched. She knew Survivor, but she never watched it. She had watched Big Brother a lot with her friend as kids. Mm. And I think your parents watched Big Brother. That's the only time I would see it is when I was in your house.
My parents are bigger on Survivor. They did a little bit of Big Brother when it was fresh. Less so later on. They probably watched like the first 2 to 3 seasons.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that's the only time I remember really knowing, like seeing Big Brother. But anyways, my wife was like, okay, we've watched a lot of Survivor. Can we watch she's like, there's 2 seasons. They're like really dramatic. I'd like you to watch them. Gotta say, sucks compared to Survivor. It does not hold a candle to Survivor.
I find Big Brother has tighter social dynamics just because of the physical proximity, and it's all in a house.
You're stuck in a house.
So there's more room for subtlety, but there's also more room for drama. So I find like the gameplay is more layered than Survivor. Like Survivor, like you'll have a lot of like the challenges, which Big Brother has too, but it's more like, okay, this one big event than that one big event. Whereas Survivor, you have the Big Brother, you have the layered social game. Like you'll have the obvious challenges, but then it's like, since you're so close, there's so much going on, and it's a tighter chess match than Survivor.
I get it's more of a kind of a subtle modern day social experiment, whereas Survivor is kind of like, no matter what era you're in, you're put on an island and you're going to starve, like you're going to withstand the elements. So I get what you're saying. But I just find that whole concept a bit more interesting. It's like slightly more Lord of the Flies-ish, right? It's a bit more pure and grand, whereas like Big Brother's like they're stuck in a LA condo and it's just like, okay.
Also, when are we doing Amazing Race? Like we had that idea like 8 years ago and just went nowhere.
Oh, like to actually participate?
Yeah.
I mean, we need to apply.
That's true.
Yeah.
So,
all right,
so
let's put that on the bucket list.
All right. Okay, well, I got a rapid fire one for you.
Yeah.
What's the, we had Brian Keough on a few weeks ago. What's been the modifications in your workout routine since?
Oof, good question. For me, it's really been concentrating on my lower back because for some reason, every once in a while, I get a sore lower back. I think it's also since I've started working from home, the sitting has just gotten, I don't know, worse or longer, whatever it is in my home office. So I tend to have a pretty sore lower back and I like to be able to stay really active. But the second you have a sore back, it really affects everything. So I've been trying to really improve my squat, my deadlift form, and do more deadlifts and things like that, where I can really strengthen my lower back, basically anywhere between the back of my legs, the hammies, all the way up to the mid back is what I've been trying to strengthen and just do better. So I'm not trying to do like a lot of weight. I'm just trying to do it smart. So I don't hurt my lower back. I've done it. I've heard it doing squats before. And
so what I'm hearing from this is you're still not stretching.
I'm stretching more, but of course, dude, I will be honest. Probably my entire life, I will have not stretched
enough. I still remember this one day in fourth grade where like we're all sitting with like the PE teacher. I was like, okay, kids, touch your toes like while you're seated. And like we're all struggling to touch our toes. And just have William like, ha, this is easy. You basically just like bend your knees to like bring your heels to your butt and just grab your toes. You're like, this is so easy. You just had to touch your toes. You never said that. Yeah, I had my leg straight.
God, I was such a little shit.
I remember seeing that. I was like, that was genius. Why did I not think of that?
Troll. I was a troll. Cool. All right. Last thing before we delve into our subject matter here. Our recurring segment, canceled. Jason, what will be canceled next?
This is deep into the heart of European culture. But it'll definitely be on the chopping block eventually because it has to do with pride and familial ties and Western culture. Scottish tartans. Scottish tartans, Scottish family crests, Scottish, call it like Highland claims to land. Anything Gaelic having to stuff. Do with like familial pride having to do with land in Scotland.
Okay. That would make us shit out of luck if that actually happens because we both have some scars, some tattoos to show our crest. But
we'll be on the chopping block when it comes to that.
Yep.
How about you? What do you got?
As for me, I will go with the Masters golf tournament. Will no longer be called Masters.
Very well done. Yep.
I mean,
how's that not happened yet?
I don't know. Maybe it's because Tiger Woods was kind of head of the golf game for a while. I don't know.
Because when I was doing track and field, Masters referred to any athlete who was 35 and up. So it just meant like older. Like you're a little bit past your prime. So the standards were a little bit lower.
Seniors in the sports world.
Well, us senior was 21 to, but yeah, senior citizen. Us senior was like 21 to 34. Masters was 35 and up.
Yeah. I meant more like your senior citizen card. You know how like at 55, you can go to Shoppers and get some discount kind of thing.
And also the Masters, like they are the ones who have best mastered the game.
Absolutely.
You could put master's degree in that one too, I guess. But yours was definitely more poignant.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, so I'm going with the Masters tournament. Mm. So we shall see. All right. So Jason, how about you, you lead us off here. We are talking today about part two of our four-part series on male or masculine archetypes. As we covered last week, they are Jungian-based archetypes, but they were the ones, the model we're directly basing ourselves off of are from Robert Moore, who's a psychologist, and then Doug Gillette, who's a mythologist, I believe. So they wrote a book in 1990 all about male archetypes, and they divide it in four major mature archetypes of man. So once again, as a refresher, we have the king, the magician, the lover, the warrior. They have their shadow forms to go along with that, and they also have their child forms to go along with that. So today we're going to talk about the second one, which is the magician archetype. So I'll let you introduce this one.
Yeah, and that was actually a really good summary of the whole premise of the idea. And the reason that we're covering this is that we definitely see a decrease in masculinity in today's society. We think masculinity is of utmost importance in a healthy and thriving society, and that the saying of just be a man really isn't useful if you don't know what be a man means. And this doesn't mean that the four archetypes are the be-all, end-all. It's an interesting kind of thought experiment to see what are some of the facets of the components of a mature man's character. Yeah. And the king was the benevolent leader. He was the judge. He was the arbiter. He was courageous. He was the summation of all the other archetypes. And he was the one who was there to see, to protect, to provide, and to make sure that everyone had what they needed to thrive.
Yeah, I would say the ultimate kind of paternalistic archetype, right? The ultimate patriarch, I would say.
Yeah, in its purest form.
Right. Just before I actually get into the magician, what you just said here reminded me, I was talking to a friend not that long ago, maybe a few months ago, and we were talking about kind of a bit of philosophy, politics, you know, those kind of big topics. And he asked me, people like Jordan Peterson had come up, Joe Rogan, a few others. And he had asked me, he said, I've noticed a phenomenon that no matter what your political leaning, you may love or hate any of these people, you know, that are watched on YouTube and podcasts and things like that. But he said, no matter what, all of my male friends seem to at least know who they are, right? Compared to a lot of women who don't necessarily, it's probably hard to find someone who's never heard of Joe Rogan today, but let's just say, or Jordan Peterson, that he pointed out that a lot of those people, Ben Shapiro, whoever, right, from any of the political, wherever on the political scale. And he said, yeah, it seems that every guy I know, at least if they don't like them, they at least have heard of all of them. And he said, why is that? And I gave him a few reasons, but the main reason I think, at least, is that, and I saw this quote one day, and it was basically people like Peterson are fathers for a fatherless generation. And when we talk about this, and this is kind of why we're doing this, there is this kind of crisis in masculinity, if you will. There is the kind of, who should I base myself off of? How should I act as a man? What's my place in this world? And I think a lot of these folks that we mentioned, the Petersons of the world, the Rogans of the world, Gadsad, whoever you may want, are that, not necessarily that direct kind of, hand-to-hand masculinity, if you will, that physical masculinity, but definitely a lot of that intellectual masculinity that's been missing for the past decades, really.
I think at the end of the day, men recognize men in its truest form, and we have innate respect for that, for someone who is willing to be courageous, willing to stand towards truth, someone who is willing to oppose poisonous views and defend what is right and righteous. And for those reasons, whenever those guys step forth, everyone just kind of says, yep, whether I agree or disagree, I understand where this person is coming from. And there's like the chimpanzee brain just recognizes what's going on there.
And I do think, though, there's a lot of people, a lot of men and boys out there who do need guidance, right? Most people need a leader. And it doesn't mean they need to take everything that is said, but the fact that they can explore their ideas that they've, you know, haven't been able to explore before, thanks to folks having these open discussions or these intellectual debates, I think is a net positive.
It is, as long as it's not suppressed.
Yeah,
or absolutely. Admonished or demonized. And they are all of the above right now.
By some folks, absolutely.
But we're here to hopefully try to open that up a little bit better. Now, if we can get one viewer, hey, we did something right today.
Exactly. So sorry, Jason, the magician.
Okay. So like I said, the king was that benevolent leader, emphasis on benevolent. He wants to see others thrive, is not egotistical, and very much is his actions are fair, but will help others reach their potential. He's also the summation of all the other archetypes. He has his own traits, but it's also part of the magician, also part lover, also part warrior. What the magician ultimately is, and there's the childhood archetype that we'll get into in a moment, it's that person who has learned secret knowledge, who is a mentor, but the everlasting student who's always hungry for knowledge, who will always learn and always pass on. So, Will, would you rather we start with the adult form, or would you rather start with the childhood
form? Yeah, let's go with the child. That's what we did last time. Start with the childhood form. I like that just because it's kind of the natural, you know, the natural order of things. So let's go ahead and start with the kid, because often at the beginning of any journey, if we look at a novel or a movie, any kind of adventure, it's typically the origin story first, right?
Yeah, and you could kind of see this as the hero's journey, where, you know, you start innocent, something happens, you have to go through hell, you develop, you grow, you slay the dragon, and then you return home. So the precocious child is the magician's childhood form. So you can kind of think of it as a hero's journey, where you start out innocent, something happens, you go on a journey, it's bad, you learn, you grow, you develop. Eventually, you gain the skills, you slay the dragon, you go back home with a newfound appreciation of the world and new knowledge. The precocious child very much embodies those first few steps where and you can be an adult and be a precocious child. Like, again, with all these childhood forms, don't think it's only pre-18 years old and then you're automatically grandfathered into the adult form when you're an adult. It's not how it works. It's very much a mental thing.
In fact, that's a problem in a lot of our society.
Especially, like, I think when we were going through the king, we saw the high chair tyrant, which was like that young kid who was just like, he's angry. He just wants and takes and all that. And a lot of men are stuck in that form today. But, you know, listen to the last episode. We spoke about that one. So the precocious child, Will, remember when we were kids and we discovered dinosaurs?
I was obsessed with
how
dinosaurs.
How excited were we when we figured out like there was these like mythical creatures that actually existed back in the day, and we had these little plastic figurines and we'd set them up to, you know, a little like savanna kind of things, or in the sand or in the grass. Yeah,
the Jurassic era.
And like, we just wanted to learn so much about it. Well, that's the precocious child at work. It's that all of a sudden there's a new possibility in front of you and you just want to learn it. Like, I'll give you an example. When I was a teenager, and I can even think of some adult examples, it was a high school concert where one of my classmates picked up a guitar and played Classical Gas, Mason Williams Classical Gas. It's a beautiful, really hard, difficult piece to play on acoustic guitar. And I remember seeing that and my mind was just blown. And I said, I want to learn that. To this day, I can only play about like 8 to 10 measures of it. Sure. But it was that initial moment where you're just like, wow, there's something here and I want to discover it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there. I've been there with a lot of rock and roll and honky tonk piano. As you know, I took piano lessons most of my childhood, played in a couple, you know, very small bands, but yeah, very, yeah. Anytime there's a child that discovers something new and then wants to delve into it, that's really the main, I'd say, characteristic of the precocious child.
And you keep that as a man, right? Like the
absolutely.
That's the part of the magician who always wants to learn. That's the doctor who is at the top of his field, but is always finding the next scientific paper. He's always on the cutting edge of his field because he loves it. He's in it. It's part of him. It's so ingrained that he just wants to know more and more and more and more. That's the precocious child as an adult.
Right. So do you have good examples through pop culture or literature that would fit into the precocious child?
One that I love, like I kind of flex my love of Star Wars on the last episode, so I'm gonna keep the trend. Luke. Luke is very much the hero's journey, but you think when he's on the Millennium Falcon with Obi-Wan, he puts the helmet on so he can't see, and Obi-Wan says, you know, just trust in the Force, and then the little robot shooting lasers at him. And all of a sudden, he can kind of start to deflect it, and then he gets it. He's like, wait, 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 there's something here. And now all of a sudden he wants to learn more. Later he goes on to Dagobah after, you know, the passing of Obi-Wan on the Death Star and everything. And he had that first little taste, and Yoda opens his mind to what's possible when he lifts the X-Wing out of the swamp. And that's when it really hits him. He's like, oh, I want to see what's here. And then he's all ears to learn.
I'd even go back and say there was something really at the very beginning of the movie where he's kind of, you know, stuck on Tatooine. He's orphaned, if you will, you know, with his aunt and uncle. And it's just him staring out, right? Like there's more, right? I remember that scene because it's one of my favorite parts of the score of the music in the movies. And I think it's the two sons, yeah. Right? It's got the two Tatooine sons. And you know, he knows there's more out there, right? There's more to this galaxy. And so, you know, it's just the beginning of his adventure, but he's got this thirst to learn and explore, which is a great part of the precocious child.
It's such a good hero's journey, like Luke's story in Star Wars.
And can we bitch for a second episode? We watched it together. I remember I brought you. I watched it a second time.
I know where we're going with this one. All right, I'm all ears. You lead this one off.
Oh, I just wanted to say episode 8, I believe. Yeah, I brought you to the theaters. We went with my family, remember? Yep. And I had already seen it with my cousins before I went back home to visit you guys for Christmas. And I was like, yeah, it's visually stunning. There's some cool parts for sure. You know, it's Star Wars. It's got a massive budget. But I was like, yeah, just wait. It's. Okay. I was like, I need to watch it a second time. But there's a lot of stuff that annoyed the shit out of me. In that movie. And one of the biggest things even pissed Mark Hamill off. So, you know, Luke Skywalker in person is how they wrote in Luke Skywalker for episode 8, where he's like this old, like just a crusty old man who's given up, who, you know, who was the guy who was saving the universe and was going to open this Jedi Academy and all this stuff. And now it's just like, yeah, I'm like this crusty old man who hates my life on this nothing island in the middle of nowhere in the galaxy. And yeah, like nothing's worth saving. I'm sour. I won't teach Rey anything that I know, which is like the antithesis of who and what Luke Skywalker is.
So one of your talents, and I have no idea how you developed this one, is you are exceedingly accurate at rating movies and really summarizing whether or not someone will like them. No idea how you developed that. You developed that sometime in your teens. But you're by
I like movies you're
by far the
but
best
I gotta know the person.
So
it's funny you say that. My mom is funny throughout our family members. My mom will also agree with you. She always says I trust what Will says for like taste in movies. So if I say, Mom, you'll like this movie, she'll trust me 100% and go like, yeah, I'll watch this movie. Will told me to watch it.
I've never had an instance where you're like, okay, this movie has this good, this bad, this good. You'll like this. You'll dislike this, and you'll be wrong. So in this movie here,
thank you.
Yep, visually stunning. If you plug your ears, it's kind of cool to watch. And it's we went and we saw this at a movie theater, right? Sure, it was in Camelton. There was all of 8 people there, and it was
cold.
Like 2 degrees Celsius. Like it was Camelton.
I think you could hear the movie next door.
What was what it was, right?
Yeah,
but it's a theater, so it's still a public area. You want to be respectful and all that. And I just remember that we're in this scene where, okay, spoilers for like a 5-year-old movie at this point, where Leia gets like blasted into space, has her Mary Poppins moment, force brings herself back to the ship somehow. And I just audibly, what the hell? Like, that's not how the force works.
Yeah.
And it was like so many moments like that. And then you had like Captain SJW with her purple hair. I was like, oh, well, that wasn't on the nose.
Making the male pilot look at it like an idiot who just wanted to help and know what's going on.
And then like every male character is just useless other than Finn, who's like,
including Luke,
who's mildly a bad boy. And then like the one moment where like Finn is indisposed, both like Captain SJW and Leia give each other a little wink, like, ooh, he's cool. It's like, what the fuck? And then Luke, who's a hermit shut-in, who's supposed to be the most powerful Jedi ever, who force dies because he was on a Skype call. What the fuck was
that?
What was that?
That was the worst.
What was that?
That was the worst. He doesn't. So he's ready to die, which, okay, fine. If that's your time, that's your time. The, you know, Jedi has this odd religion that, you know, is beyond me. So
screw
if he's like
the religion, it's the force. That's not how the force works. You don't just opt to die. At least Obi-Wan got sliced in two. Like, okay, Yoda. Okay.
Exactly. No, but I'm getting there. If he was ready to die, like Obi or whoever, like if that was his time in his Jedi religion, cool. But go to that planet in person and fight Kylo Ren in person. That whole like, oh, Kylo Ren just fights a hologram. That doesn't make sense. That is not the Force. That's not how it works. That's not how it has ever or will ever work. Like that was just, and I'm not even trying to sound like a Star Wars snob, because
I will take that mantle. Don't you worry.
You are.
Give me that title. I'll take the arrows for this one.
But like, way to upset Star Wars fans and go like, you guys aren't even respecting the lore like at all.
And then Rey's just the bestest ever because reasons. It's like, no, you literally had nothing to do. And why is Luke drinking like green, like tit milk from a like giraffe?
Yeah.
Camel, kangaroo, lizard thing. No. Why? Yeah. And tosses his father's lightsaber over his shoulder. Are you shitting me? No.
Yeah, it was the worst. It's like if a studio decided to like, I don't know, create Lord of the Rings episode or, you know, four, Lord of the Rings movie four. And I don't know, they're just like, oh yeah, Sauron's a good guy now. And you're like, what? No. You know, like just, you can't change the rules.
Oh, here's another one. Snoke's death in the throne scene. Build up Snoke all you want. And then what? He gets force tricked. Like he feels the emotions of the other one. He's like, oh, you're turning the lightsaber. Oops, it's through me. T'es pas sérieux. I remember we were in the theater for that one. And I just went, nah. Like audibly in the theater. At this point, I have no patience left.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, we're dwelling on Star Wars way too much.
Thank you. I needed that catharsis. But
there you go. Early Luke, great example of the precocious child. I'll just finish real quick here. We mentioned him in the last episode. Harry Potter, also a great example of a precocious child. Again, we think he's a little bit of a Mary Sue as a hero, as a character altogether. But I mean, you know, I would also say Hermione is a great precocious child. Hermione has got this thirst to learn. She's a huge nerd. She cannot get enough knowledge, right? That's her whole thing. Tintin was a big kind of literary hero of mine when I was a kid. So the Tintin bande dessinées, and he's a young reporter. He's a little guy, still wet behind the ears. But again, his whole thing is he gets into trouble, but solves these mysteries and these crimes because he's got that thirst for knowledge and for, you know, figuring out what's what.
Where in the world does the expression come from, still wet behind the ears?
I don't know, like when you're a mammal and you're born, you're all juicy from amniotic fluids or whatever.
Okay. Shadow form.
Yeah, just a sec. Two more. Hercules, because I got to mention that movie. Love Hercules as a kid. So a little bit of that in Hercules, even though he's got that ego, but I'd still say part of him is a precocious child. And then last one, Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird is also great. We could have also mentioned her in the child form for the king. But Scout, one of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird, Scout brings this innocence to the book, to the narrative, but also has all of these questions. And that's how you discover as a reader the book, right? The information throughout the book and the environment and the, you know, those tense times due to, you know, race issues and things like that. So yeah, Scout's like a perfectly written character, I find. In that sense. Anyways, go ahead. Shadow form.
So one thing that I've noticed so far that both of the positive childhood archetypes share is the willingness to go into the unknown and have a genuine curiosity for the world. The divine child was all about making social connections, learning new things, seeing new things, going to new places. It's kind of like when you're a kid and you want to build a treehouse. Like you have no idea what you're doing, but you can go do it anyways. It'll be fun. And
then dad picks up the slack.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? You got into the woods. You learned what poison ivy was. It was a good day. And then the precocious child is all about, holy shoot, I can do tricks with cards. That's cool. Like, what else can I learn with these? But then the shadow forms, where you have always the active and the passive form. The active form takes that same energy, but doesn't direct it in a positive way. So you have here the know-it-all trickster, which is the active passive form of the precocious child. He can be mischievous. He's very mischievous, and so could the precocious child be. But he does it out of the need to demonstrate superiority. So this is a kid who pranks just for the sake of pranking, or even the adult who will purposely set you up to fail just to see you fail. This person can often charm their way out of trouble. They tend to be quite smart, but they lost touch with their divine child. They don't see their own potential for greatness. They tend to be envious and more deceptive.
Yeah, they lose a bit of the nobility, right? A little bit of that benevolence.
Yeah, and an image I have for that would be Bart Simpson. You know, intelligent child, but misdirected. I don't even want to say misguided, but misdirected. Like, he tends to be hard on himself. He tends to think that he's going to fail, even though he has the raw IQ and the raw ability to do what he needs to do.
Yeah, he's not a stupid kid, right? From what I remember.
No, he's not stupid at all. Like, that's more like the Ralph Wiggum, like the actually dumb kid. He's
or Homer.
Or Homer, yeah, but you know, that's another discussion.
That's the male archetype that's been represented in all of pop culture for the last 40 years.
All of them.
The dumb father.
The dumb, fat, incompetent male who's useless and you know, father's bad sort of thing. But anyway, so the know-it-all trickster, Bart fits him to a T. He's smart enough. He plays pranks, but it's because he doesn't know how to direct his energy. He hasn't had good male guidance to channel his energies in a positive way.
Another one I would say, and I think fits very well, again, more of a complex character, so can fit in other archetypes, but he definitely dips into his toes in this one, and this is Spider-Man. And I was a big Spider-Man fan as a kid, watched the whole series throughout the 90s. I think he fits this very well, right? Especially after the loss of his uncle, he thinks it's partly his fault. He's got this chip on his shoulder for sure, but at the same time, he knows he's smart and capable. And he also even becomes a little show off once he gets these powers and needs to learn how to, you know, kind of manage himself and his what's the word I'm looking for here, modesty, if you will, but throughout the series, and this is something I liked a lot and kind of related to, is he's got kind of a yappy, he's got a smart mouth, right? He's not perfect. All of those things I think fit very well into the trickster for Spider-Man. Very smart guy too, right? I think
Spider-Man just doesn't necessarily fit in a lot of different archetypes, and I would give him 20% this one. I'd say he's evenly distributed between many.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I just see, especially young Spider-Man, before he's mastered himself, I see him very much in the know-it-all trickster. Very smart guy, but then has this dark side when he becomes Spider-Man, right? He's still like the very nice know-it-all Peter Parker, but then he becomes that trickster at night when he can stop those bad guys and be, you know, kind of a dick to them and all of these things, which is amusing.
He has power. It's kind of like the nerd's fantasy. It's like all of a sudden to have power and be able to show off. It's the guy who's been bullied, who now all of a sudden can be the bully, but is still a nice guy at heart. That's pretty much the archetype.
And once he takes off the mask, he still has enough, you know, poise and restraint to not, you know, to still keep his identity secret, stay modest, Peter Parker, all of that stuff. Unless you watched Spider-Man 3, which was horrendous.
Do you mean the one where like Venom takes over and Tobey Maguire dances in the street?
Yeah, and becomes emo and cocky.
Oh, man, the memes are still so good of that one.
Cocky Tobey Maguire. cocky Tobey Maguire just doesn't work. That's incongruent.
That is very incongruent. I think that's why it's still like a meme to this day.
Yeah.
Next one. So you got the dummy. So this would be the passive shadow form of the precocious child. So whereas the precocious child has that energy to go out and learn and seek and has wondering curiosity, and the know-it-all trickster has the same ability, just tends not to use it in such a positive way. The dummy either doesn't have that ability, or similar to the divine child's shadow form, he doesn't have the discipline or the will to seek out and to learn what needs to be learned. So often they come off uncoordinated. They can come off unenthusiastic. They can seem slow to learn things. And that can be of, you know, of genuine incompetence or genuine low IQ, which is not a disparagement. It's just a fact. You know, there's a bell curve for a reason. Half the people you know are less smart than average. But often what more...
Yeah, isn't that a George Carlin quote, I think? It's like...
I got it. It's picture... Okay, stick with me here. Picture the average person. Now realize half of them are dumber than that.
Yeah.
Well, so good, man.
Exactly. He was a great...
If we could like cryo-froze one guy... Do you know who I wish we had around right now was George Carlin? Man, he could make sense in these times today.
Oof, man. Would he have some material?
He would be the world's first trillionaire. He could make a Netflix special every other week.
I mean, Netflix would have canceled him long ago.
But. Yeah, next on Cancel, George Carlin.
Yeah, George Carlin.
But what Moore argues...
Words you can't say on TV, you add one, George Carlin.
Exactly. Can you imagine, like, back in the 70s, the seven dirty words? Like, what was that? Piss, fuck, cunt, shint, tits, something.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. Motherfucking tits. There you go. He made it, like, rhyme. It just rolled off the tongue. Yeah. But I just said it, and it's no big deal. It's going to be on YouTube and Apple and Spotify, and no one cares.
I know. Yeah, it's funny how there's progress made in some ways or you know, liberal things happen in some ways, but then we lose a lot in other ways. Anyways, what's your example for the dummy shadow?
Ralph Wiggum. Now, in his case, he's the unfortunate case that he's actually dumb. It's not his fault. It's not lack of trying. It's not nothing. The kid eats boogers.
Right. That's the one who picks his nose.
Like I think it was like, look, Lisa, my nose makes its own bubble gum. I'm sorry, kid, but you ain't gonna make it. The wolves are gonna eat you.
My guy is Ron Weasley. So the dummy, again, not to the extent of Ralph Wiggum, or I would also say you could basically put any like dumb sitcom dad absolutely touches the dummy or is partly the dummy. But Ron Weasley, I think, is a good example of a subtle dummy, perhaps. He's a guy, like they make him look, you know, he comes from a poor family. So they make him look, disheveled and a little bit like he doesn't exactly fit or feel comfortable. But then on top of that, he's not necessarily the best student. He doesn't necessarily care that much when it comes to academia or succeeding. He kind of seems to want to just, float by in life a little bit, maybe because he has really smart and accomplished friends.
I find the dummy...
But he's a comic relief.
Yeah, he plays a role in the story. The dummy is plagued by sloth and also fear. He's afraid to take risks and he's afraid to work.
And I would say, again, Ron, not super negative, but definitely embodies parts of that for sure.
So that takes us to our manhood archetypes. And the summit of this mountain in this case is the magician. So what the magician is picture anyone who's learned secret knowledge and who's delved into a specialization and has built something, who has understood, who has slaved away, who has worked, and has really burnt the midnight oil at a certain task. It could be an electrician. Who went through community college, went through his apprenticeship, learned commercial, learned residential, learned industrial, and now he can wire anything. He knows things that someone else doesn't know. The easy example is a doctor. It could be an accountant. It could be anyone who has a specialized skill set who has put in the work. And that's really the key, is put in the work.
I would say to the magician, there's a big... characteristic of it too is coaching, right? It's not only that it's someone who has learned a lot, accrued a lot of knowledge or skill through time, and will always have a thirst for that knowledge, but it's also someone who is more than okay and really thrives off of teaching others, teaching kids, it could be your disciples, or if you're talking Star Wars, it could be a Jedi to, it could be Yoda to.
I'm going
to
jump the gun a little. I'm going to jump the gun a little bit on this one, and I'm going to start with an example. If you read Rich Dad Poor Dad, Rich Dad is a magician. because what he does is he teaches a young Robert Kiyosaki the ways to accrue wealth, the ways of how finance and accounting and how money and investment and wealth is built. But he doesn't
and hard work.
So he teaches values. He teaches like one of the first things he does is drop Robert off at one of his stores and says, go sweep the floor. He's teaching him values to begin with. And eventually when Robert gets frustrated and goes back to see him and tosses the broom on the floor, he says, okay, why did I get you to do that? And then as he ages, as he progresses, he's always teaching at Robert's level. And now Robert's a multimillionaire who's returning the favor and is a magician in himself. You think about his I forget the name of his board game now, but it's essentially like Life. Remember the board game Life? It's essentially that board game, but on how to invest and how to think about which investment to do next. It's all about passive income and blah, blah, blah.
I did not know that existed.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. I downloaded the app a few years ago. It was like $4 or something. And I didn't learn a whole lot, but it rewired my mindset to think about investment a little bit differently. And when you and me have discussions, like it often comes out, right? So the magician is someone like Robert Kiyosaki's rich dad, who's walked the path, knows how to get to the end result, and is now willing to bring someone up to his level and even surpass his level. So some characteristics of that person is that they're very reflective. They're introspective and they deliberate. They're very much willing to see facts for how they are. They won't try to put a spin on something. They'll understand the problem for what it is, understand the solution for what it is, accept it, try it, fail, succeed, move forward. It's a scientific method. And these people, like we just alluded to, they can teach. They're willing to teach. They want to teach. And like Robert Kiyosaki's rich dad, they're a spiritual mediator. They understand the whys of why you do something. They understand the values, and that's fundamentally what they're trying to transmit. It's the why of doing something.
I'd say that they often let their you know, mentees figure it out for themselves, though, which is always, you know, a nice thing in the movies or the books. You're like, oh, he's kind of being harsh on him, or he's being somewhat distant. And then eventually there's that click, right, for that, again, for that, the precocious child, it lights up and, oh, I get it. Everything comes together thanks to the magician, right? Thanks to the coach. Mm-hmm. I can think of many examples, but a good one for me is Mr. Miyagi, right? So in The Karate Kid, he gets him to, there's the joke like slave labor. He gets him to wax all his cars, and then he gets him to paint all of the docks and the fence and all this stuff. But while he was productive, he actually did something productive, something physical in the world. He learned how to get, you know, this.
He learned the
reflex.
He
learned the technique and the muscle memory, right? Yeah, to defend and at the end of the day, too, his fighting style was very defensive. So again, something very positive to come out from Mr. Miyagi. But when he finally realizes, you know, he's like, Daniel-san, and then he like throws a punch and throws another strike, and then Daniel can block all of the things because of the muscle memory from painting and waxing. It all clicks, right? So that you have the magician and then you have the precocious child, boom, those perfect archetypes in one scene.
And what's nice about the magician is that as you climb to the next step of learning, and all of a sudden, Ralph Macchio's character, the Karate Kid, do they call him Karate Kid, or does he have a name in that show?
No, he's Daniel.
Daniel, okay. As soon as Daniel blocks
Daniel LaRusso.
As soon as he blocks that first strike, he's you know, he's acted within the magician because he's ingrained a certain learning. But now the precocious child comes out and is like, oh, what's next? I want to see what the next thing is. Throws another strike on him, blocks it differently. Okay, you have my attention. Teach me more. And that's what's kind of the beauty of the magician, is that you realize that learning is never ending, and that every time you achieve a plateau, it's just a new ground zero. There's always another floor above.
Right. Absolutely. Any other characteristics you want to touch on before we move to...
They're not... I mentioned this one earlier, but it's really one of the beauties, and it ties well into the king archetype, whereas the king wants to elevate others and wants to give the others the tools that they need to achieve their heights. The king is not afraid to share his... Or sorry, the magician is not afraid to share his knowledge. He wants to see others elevate. He's not greedy with his knowledge. He's not scared to share. He doesn't think that it's a zero-sum game, that if I teach you, it's going to put me down because now you're closer to me. He knows that everyone learning is just going to build everyone up.
Absolutely.
So there's a few ways you can access the magician. One of the best ones that I really enjoy is create more, consume less. That can be just go try stuff. If you have a garage, like Will, like you do woodworking at home, like you've built a few things around your house. Did you always get it right on the first try?
No. Yeah.
That's the magician
coming. You absolutely make mistakes. Yeah.
So you tried a few different times. Like, okay, the deck's not quite straight. The board's not the right length. I don't really like
the aesthetic. Whoa, not my deck there. I nailed it there.
All right. Did you nail it or screw it?
I mean, I screwed it, but yeah.
But that's the idea, right? It's you're always learning. You're doing something, and you learn by doing. And I find that's one thing that I struggled with as a younger guy. And I'd say it's only the last year or two, especially since I bought this house, that I've been able to make that déclic mental, where you're taught in school, here's the words, memorize them. Yeah, vomit them out on the test. All congratulations, you now know stuff. No, you don't know shit. What you know is that you're able to take information from a page, put it in your mind, remember it for a week or so, and then put it on a piece of paper.
You don't understand. You don't
understand. And that's one thing that the magician does very well is that they learn by doing. Sure, you know, read, learn, figure out, do your research. But you're going to really learn through trial. I mean, sales. Sales is a perfect example of the magician. You suck at sales. You're 100% commission. You're not eating. You see someone who's a very good salesman. You watch them be. You try to emulate their behaviors. You kind of pick up a few nuances here and there. And as you go, you're a better salesperson. You're able to provide value. You're able to relate to your customer. You don't come off sleazy. You don't come off fake. You learn all these different things that make you better at your job. That's the magician coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's any kind of parent too who sees their child, you know, their child wants to do something or help them with something or accomplish a task. And the parent could show them exactly how it's done, or they could also sit back and the kid says, I'm going to do it this way. And the dad, for example, knows absolutely that's not the way
but
you do
go
it.
Go ahead.
Right. But hey, he needs to figure it out. And then they do it wrong or they get hurt or whatever it may be. And you're like, yeah, I went through that too. But you know what? The best way for you to have learned that is to have actually gone through this. Now you'll remember forever. This sounds stupid, but like when I was very young, I don't know, four or something, my parents, when we still had the cottage before our house, so like over an acre of lawn, my parents were mowing the lawn. And a lot of it was like push mower. So the push mower had been going for a long time. And what do? I run to it and I stick my hand right on the motor, right on the engine.
Oopsie.
Oh yeah, sear my hand. Guess what I didn't ever do after
touch
that?
Touch a hot stove.
Yeah, touch a hot engine. I learned that engines are hot when they run.
Exactly. And you know what? And that's kind of like difference too between the way men and women teach also. Men will tend to let you fail, be like, okay, cool, you failed. That's all right. You know, kiss your wounds. Go on now. Now you know.
Yeah.
Women tend to be a little more defensive and deprive people from learning from the hard way like that.
Yeah, it's the maternal instinct too, right? The will to protect and maternalize. There's also there's a saying is women, and this is not children and parents, it's you know, peers, friends. They say women socialize face to face where men socialize shoulder to shoulder, which means they often like doing things, right? They don't, whereas women like to, you know, sit down and have a coffee and catch up, talk about their families, whatever it may be. Men maybe like to build something or go work out together or even watch a movie together, whatever it may be, but it's doing something a bit more active other than just socializing with.
Well, think of your best memories with your father. I guarantee you the first five that come to mind are all you and him doing something.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It's just how we work. So another couple of things you can do to bring out the magician within you: find a mentor if there's something you want to learn, become a mentor if there's something that you're good at and you think that you can help someone else join or learn. But I would say the most important one is carve your own path. Find something that you want to succeed at and steadily chip away at it. Learn from your failures. Yeah. Hey, maybe you want to become a real estate investor. Okay. What does that mean? Go figure it out.
Yeah. So just to finish before we go to the shadow forms, a few other examples, really good ones, I think, here. Gandalf the Grey and or Gandalf the White actually shows that he has this depth to him and that he's never done learning and evolving, if you will, to go back to our Pokemon metaphors from last episode.
Charizard becomes Charmeleon.
Yeah, exactly. Qui-Gon Jinn, a very good. Master Splinter, another good. I would say most good coaches would fit very well into the magician. A real life example here is Jordan Peterson. We mentioned him quite a bit, and absolutely, right? He has his 12 rules for life and then 12 more rules for life. It's very much within the magician camp.
Absolutely. Yeah. All good examples. So the next one, the shadow forms, you got the active one, the detached manipulator. So I stressed earlier a lot how the magician is very giving with his knowledge and he's very altruistic, and he'll coach the right people. He'll coach the people that are willing to learn, willing to put the effort, walk the same journey that he did. The detached manipulator is none of that. He knows what's going on. He knows how to do the stuff, but he doesn't teach. He misleads. He teases. He withholds. He'll charge an exorbitant amount of money. He'll almost extract resources from his students and really give them no value in return. I mean, go on the internet, watch any YouTube ad. It's the get rich, get the girls, get jack quick guys. That anyone selling that is a detached manipulator. Unless they can truly back it up. Well, let me tell you, the girls are probably paid for, the Lambo's probably rented, and then Photoshop is a thing. So those are your...
That's actually a thing too. Like, I don't know. I probably discovered this a few years ago where I'm like, there's actually people who are posers enough to like rent a mansion, rent a Lamborghini to try and, I don't know, pick up chicks, get a Instagram following, like live the Dan Balzerian life, but all fake with no money to back it up. It's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird.
It's think where we come from, right? We come from a town of 8,000 people. If someone would do that, it would be so obvious. And also, there's no Lamborghinis. There's too many potholes. It'd be in the shop in no time.
There's no shop to fix it anyways. Purchase. Also, it's winter 10 months a year.
Exactly. Yeah, so you got a 15-month winter and more potholes than you have road. But so I think that's why for us, like that thing, just does, like, we never even would have thought of it. Remember our Overton window discussion where there's the unthinkable that's so far out of the realm of possibility you'll never even think about it? For us, it's that guy, because it's so unfeasible that doesn't even exist in our realm. But you get a big city, you get a Toronto, you get a New York, you get a Chicago. Now all of a sudden you have so much forest to hide that you're not going to notice one tree that's orange.
Yeah. That's very crooked. The one thing I'll say, though, in defense of the detached manipulator is, even though it's a shadow form, I think most people have an inkling, at least, of manipulator in them, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? I think being able to convey your opinion or your opinion, your thoughts well can be in part manipulative, but I think everything is slightly, partly a manipulation.
This is a manipulation. We're imparting ideas on someone else. Anytime that you espouse an idea, you're trying to convince someone of your point of view. Communication by default is a manipulation.
Yeah. Even if I say, like, Jason, Star Wars Episode 8 was shit, wasn't it? Like, it's always, and here's how I can back it up, right? Here's how I hope you agree with me. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, I think. You know, wanting to agree with other people and wanting to find things in common is a great thing. So there's always that, again, there's a bit of hopefully there's in great characters and in complex characters, there's a lot of many different.
And here's what's sad. The prime victim of the detached manipulator is the precocious child. It's the precocious child who just learned that there's a possibility. There's something that can happen out there. I want to learn. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. Someone please teach me. That's the victim of the detached manipulator.
Yeah. And actually the perfect example, the pop culture reference I'll give here is, once again, I think we've talked quite a bit about Lion King, but Scar is absolutely a manipulator, and he manipulates who? The very naive and less intelligent child, which is Simba at that point. He manipulates him throughout the movie, tricks him around his father's death, all of these things, and then waits for the opportunity to, you know, strike and so that he can become king and kick him out of the kingdom.
Yeah.
So Scar, again, a great part of Scar is a large part of Scar's archetype is within the detached manipulator. You also have here the scuzzy salesman in general, and that's just, yeah, a perfect example.
The passive shadow form of the magician, and again, what they always share is just laziness. They tend to just not put in the work that the full adult versions do. And what the innocent one, it's the guy who wants the knowledge, the power, and the ability of the magician, but he just doesn't put in the work. So that's the guy who will get super excited about a new hobby or a project, will buy everything, you know, get the garage stocked for, say he wants to fix up the car. He'll get the lifts, he'll get the welder, he'll get all the ratchets and wrenches and everything. Doesn't know what he's doing. Doesn't bother to learn. Everything's going to sit in the garage, cost him $5,000, but that's it. The story ends there. So it's not just that they're lazy, but the second component of them is that they're envious of the success of the people that put in the work. So not only do they not put in the work, they hate those who actually did. And there you go. That's your innocent one who's not so innocent.
Yeah. And I'd say that's, again, if we're being honest, there's a part of us that always inkles a little bit in the innocent one. I have not accomplished, even though I like to think I'm not a procrastinator for the most part, I can be quite productive. There's always things I wish I had done. And there's always more time and effort I could dedicate to something I haven't dedicated, you know, enough time to. So, again, I think a very important archetype there, a very real one. As for examples, I'd say I actually wrote literally everyone in our society, especially right now. I think there's a lot of envious people. I think, especially if we get into the whole, you know, victim ideology that, you know, everyone's a victim.
Yeah, the victimization many Olympics,
right? It's, to me, that fits very well in the innocent one, where it's just like, I don't have this or I don't have that because society is unjust and some people are mean and all of these things. And at the end of the day, it's because they haven't tried. And a thing I would tie into the innocent one, even though it's passive, this would be a bit more active. So a bit more negative than simply just the innocent one passive form. Is that what you see, a trend you see a lot today is that there's a lot of people who, yes, are envious, lazy, have not done what others have done, have not put in the hours, the sweat equity, the blood, the sweat, the tears, everything, but they have no problem demolishing or tearing down something that has been built previously. And I think that is a horrible trend. I think that is just the most regressive, anti-progressive, call it whatever you want. I think that is a horrible, horrible trend.
You can think of 1,000 examples, statues being torn down, buildings being renamed,
anything,
any founder being annexed from the history books,
anything, criticizing a book for a word it uses. And I'm like, can you write a book that is written that well? Can you do math as well as this guy who developed this certain arithmetic or whatever hundreds of years ago when they had no knowledge about any of this? You know, just simple things like that, or even bitching about, and we're guilty of this, but like bitching about our computers and going like, yeah, I don't understand the first thing that goes into like the internet servers memory processing.
Could you imagine all of this if you had to build your own, like if you and me both had to build our own computers and find a way to create the internet to talk to each other? Like, we are such morons compared to the people who figured that out.
Yeah, right. So again, it's like be somewhat cognizant that you don't know, actually you know nothing, or you know 0.01% of things, and that there is someone that came before you that was a lot smarter and worked a lot harder to develop almost everything you're using today.
Yeah, it's the armchair quarterback. Or
that you benefited from. Yeah. So I would tie this one closely to the innocent one.
So very, very well said, man. I think that's a good little warning and a good little eye opener for what we see today. But the magician, very, very powerful archetype. It's all about continuous learning.
It's a good one.
It's all about giving, learning, and just helping others become. It's a great component of the king. I think next time we'll talk about the lover. And it's that one there, not all about sex. It's all about relationships and your interactions with others. And it's one that...
It's not the Hugh Hefner of archetypes.
One of the shadow forms is, but we'll get to that.
Yes. Right on. Well, guys, thanks a lot for tuning in. As Jason said, part 3 coming next week. This was another episode of The Independent Mindset. As usual, you can find us wherever podcasts are listened to. So that's Pocket Cast, Simplecast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of them. And you can always follow us on Instagram. You can DM us if you want us to talk about a certain topic, or you have a question or a comment about something we did cover. So until next time, cheers.